Welcome to the El Arpa podcast, the home for cultural chit-chat in and outside Madrid. People will talk. Welcome to the latest episode of the El Arpa podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. Mary, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Good. That's part one. We talked to you in part two. Okay, let's flesh this out a little bit. We know these people listening want some banter. So, you are going to be dancing Bollywood in the July weekends. Three dances. One's regional, one something else, and one is shameful and saucy. You mentioned about the regional dance, how you prefer those regional dances.
Yes.
Now, off podcast microphone, we're talking about Asia in another context, but they've actually adapted kind of Greek theater in Korea, specifically the tale of Helen of Troy. And they've used it to talk about the Indochina War, and also it's been used to tell the story of the Japanese occupation of Korea, because as you probably know, historically and even today, there is a lot of controversy over the idea of comfort women, women forced into prostitution for the Japanese soldiers. And the bone of contention is between those two governments now is, well, for the degree of coercion and the degree of willingness. To tell those kind of controversial stories, they've used Greek theatre to tell that, because they said, well, you know, traditional Korean theatre and traditional Greek theatre talks about big emotions, epic things, which I think a lot of ancient structures do anyway, so they're probably very transferable. But for other reasons, I'm not familiar that much with the mechanics of Korean theatre. They transfer very well, or they accept very well the kind of mechanics of Greek theatre as well. So, sorry, a bit of a pause. There is 50 million old people walking past us for some reason. Anyway, so we'll just keep talking and hopefully they'll scuttle off to their bridge tournaments. That's ageism. You should be keep me in check.
I'm not, because like whatever the volume you have, like theirs will be louder.
That's true. This is all part of the beauty and poetry of recording outdoors in Madrid.
While we get our new studio set up.
And also as well, they left the guy whistling at the back just to screw us over. Couldn't get that out of the way at first. No, it had to be the last. Anyway, I got distracted. Yeah, the reason I bring it up is in relation to your dancing, because you're going to be doing a weird fusion between, I mean, interesting fusion.
Yeah, yeah.
Between salsa, flamenco, and MC Hammer shit.
No, that's just a pant.
Okay. Yeah?
No, well, it's just Bollywood, I think we mention all the times. It just mixes with all the dances. They love just getting all sorts of world dances, and now I'm really scared at your change of body language.
No, I want to put it to you.
Okay.
That your Bollywood teacher probably doesn't know many Indian dances, and that's why she has to go, ta-da!
Yeah.
I've mixed German strudel dancing with Bollywood dancing.
No, it's because like in the past that they had their own traditional music, but part of them, it's still traditional, but part of them, I mean, at the end of the day, like, Bollywood is music that comes from the movies, so in the movies, they take details from all cultures, and, you know, they like mixing it. It's part of, like, the entity of the music.
Well, that's movie making, I guess. That's true. Like, Quentin Tarantino is famous for taking things from other cultures. There's a great movie, I can't remember the name, it's a French movie, starring a guy who was a criminal mafioso, played the piano as well, and was based on a Harry Keitel movie from the 70s. So a rare example of a movie going into French cinema from Hollywood. Usually it's the other way around. So you're right. I mean, in cinematic terms, it's not an unusual process. So this old person alert here, I think they're staying away from us. The stench of youth coming from us is too much, so I think we'll be safe. I want to send this to you. I've seen examples of Indian soap operas,
mm-hmm.
and the editing is incredible. Do you have any idea what I'm going to talk to you about?
No.
The reaction shots. I don't know if this is real or not, because this is a meme that's been going around of like different Indian things. And this, if this has like been like edited by somebody else to make it look ridiculous, then I apologize for it. But it looks like it's legit, where somebody reacting to something, you have five reaction shots, there's five people in the room, like slow motion, and there's one scene they show of one person, like she's like looking at a guy and he's looking at her, she's in a car, and it cuts between the two of them, and like there's like slow motion, quick motion, there's like black and white, there's like static, like there's even another scene where a woman is like signing a contract and she like uncaps the pen, and it's like the Matrix or a John Woo movie. And also it's just like any simple action is just ramped up. It's like they've put the editors in their room and gave them like 500 grams of cocaine and said, hey, make this dynamic. So we'll put a link to some examples of this in the podcast bio, I'll definitely send this to you, because you can give me your reaction or we can watch it together.
Yes, well,
yeah,
I would believe it. I mean, of course, maybe it's been exaggerated just for the sake of like having fun, but I would believe it, because I've watched like Arabic soap operas and they're very similar. It's like very dramatic and Turkish, and it's like, you know, dun, 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 and then all the faces, and
yeah.
Yeah, and to be honest, like, well, South American soap operas sometimes are like that as well. It's like this huge dramatism and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, this beat and things like that, and then nothing really happens, but it's like... Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah. You know? We're out of ice cream.
Yes, exactly. Dun, dun, dun.
I need to get a new pen.
Dun. That kind of thing.
Need to get the windows cleaned.
Lots of Casio. And so on, yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Speaking of soap operas, didn't think this was going to go in this direction, but I'll tell this story and we'll go to part two. In the Blind Boy podcast, he talks about how his grandfather, his unit of the IRA, the old IRA, captured a British soldier, black and tan, during the Irish War of Independence. And because the guy was English, he had no idea what he was talking about, because back then we didn't have TVs, obviously, to kind of like, you know, educate us about other accents and get our ears accustomed to it. And as a side note, if you ever hear a posh wanker from Dublin 4 speaking like a posh wanker, it's because TVs came in the 60s and they started watching American and British shows and started sounding like a wanker with their like fake accent. Like literally, sociologically and anthropologically, a lot of those accents from that posh part of Dublin did not exist in the country before the advent of television. But anyway, I digress. The story is interesting because, like, anyway, the guy worked in the farm. I think he was happy to be out of the firing line. And then, like, you know, several years later, EastEnders is on the TV, and the grandfather goes, oh, that's the accent where that guy was, you know, that guy we had here, that's his accent. So obviously he was like a Cockney or something, which he never knew until, like, watching EastEnders, like kind of made his brain remember or make the association, oh, that guy, that black and tan is from that part of the world, kind of thing. So interesting.
Okay.
yeah,
interesting. It's crazy, always about the accents, and you know, and then the way that even like in, like conversely, like the way that people are forced to adapt to their accents, or you know, like socially, or
of course, yeah.
Show class or whatever, like RP and all this.
Or receive pronunciation. Well, yeah, but of course, it's pointless to impose those things on accents or languages, because, I think now, I mean, I'm sure in lots of countries this has happened, where there's only been like clean accents for the TV stations or for the bits between TV shows where the continuity, where they say, well, that was Home and Away. Now next we have Wheel of Fortune. But you probably have more examples in most countries now of kind of regional accents kind of doing those continuity pieces. But I also remember as well hearing stories about like historians, you know, historical roadshows around Ireland, and if they had a very strong inner city Dublin accent, like sometimes you'd be worried like that they come across as well, thick, basically.
And they put the titles or something like that.
Well, yeah, more
because
or less.
Sometimes they do it on Spanish TV.
Really? Well, no, this is like roadshow, so they're actually there in person, so.
Yeah.
But then you have the famous examples of Trainspotting being subtitled in America, but.
Oh, really?
But that's not because of a class thing, that's because of, yeah. Not
slang
being able. Well, yeah, not being able, not really being exposed to that accent, but
yeah.
But yeah, it is shameful that you have those kind of biases against regional accents still. And it's funny to think of Dublin, you know, that being a regional accent. But as I said, you have the D4 kind of posh accent or a neutral accent, or a West Midlands is how people would describe Terry Wogan, which is the centre, kind of centre of the country. But yeah, the inner city. Would be kind of considered kind of like scummy or something like that, you know.
Mm.
That's not what I think it is, but you know, sometimes people be worried that if you sound like that, you sound like a ne'er do well. So there.
This was part one.
That's part one. Oh no!
Hey, hey.
I forgot to get orange juice in the supermarket.
Okay then.
Let's no go. Indian dranic music.
Dun, dun, dun.
And that was part one. Okay, we'll be back for part two. So, welcome to part two of the show. We're still here in balmy, leafy, sunny Manuel Becerra. And we're going to talk about various things in this part, because a podcast is nothing but talking about things. So, what's your favorite thing, Maria? Free speech. Excellent choice.
Now I was thinking casting our pods.
Oh, casting our pods. Actually, yeah, actually, well, we've been working on a podcast thing with an American podcast. This is more part three stuff, but basically, potentially submitting a story. Well, the story has been submitted and has been accepted, but hopefully my narration of that will be on an American podcast. More as that follows. But you also give me, well, told us about the Renfe, which is the Spanish rail network, and their story competition, 99 words.
Yeah, it's yeah. A micro story. It's very fashionable at the moment.
It is quite fashionable, yeah, because judges couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, but like, word limit is getting like shorter and shorter. Like, it's going to be like 3 words next.
Yeah. Do you have an idea where we're going to make 2 submissions, one each?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you have an idea?
Well, it's about like train and traveling, and then, well, everybody's just going to be doing the typical like metaphor or whatever. So,
because you know what trains represent?
Traveling.
Exactly.
And yeah, I don't know, maybe something to do with Trainspotting.
That'd be great, actually.
So there.
Heroin on the old Chamartín Sol Express.
Yeah, just want to make it something really wacky that they'll completely ignore because it's too wacky, and then something that is like very mainstream, we win.
That's how it works.
Yep.
They don't respect artistic integrity.
Exactly. That's how they roll.
Speaking of wacky, I've shown you Jonathan Pye before.
Oh, yeah.
So, do you remember who he is?
Yeah, he's the guy that does fake news.
No, he doesn't do fake news. That's an important distinction.
No?
Fake news is what Fox News does.
No, but I mean, like, he sort of like pretends he's doing a report.
Yeah.
But it's not a real report, but it looks like it's real.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a criticism on fake news?
Okay.
More or less.
You got there eventually. Exactly. You weren't too impressed by his performance, I guess, in the one video that I've shown you. More impressed by the people who kind of go, hey, there's a guy shouting at the camera here in the background.
Maybe it wasn't my best moment, but I just wasn't sure like what to expect, so I was a bit confused as to what
I was
watching. Yeah.
I'll show you a couple more. I think it'll make sense. But the shtick is that he does a report to camera, like very neutral, and then like when they're back in studio doing another thing and he's waiting for a word to come through for him to say something else or do something else, he kind of talks to the person back in studio like about that story, but in a very raw and very honest way. So if he says like, you know, and the Tories have apologized unreservedly for the immigration debacle, you know, like what's been happening there, and then he'll go, yes, because if you're not white, you're not fucking English, are you? And like that's when he's like not doing the piece of the camera, he's just talking to the person back in the studio. So the real report prefaces his actual opinion about the emerging story, for example, as he's left wing, he's liberal, and he's quite critical of the Tories, and we've spoken about this in a previous podcast about those kind of immigration things and the Enoch Powell situation as well. So politically speaking, he is a great guy, I think. Also why he's doing this, he's an out-of-work actor, he just needed a gig, so he decided to create a gig for himself. And as in terms of the equipment that you need and the budget, it kind of seems like you don't need much. It's low cost. No, it's just him, a camera, a suit, and an earpiece, which could be like one half of a Sony Walkman earphone dangling into his sleeve. Why is fascinating? I think I haven't sent this to you, but I would recommend you checking it out, because Owen Jones meets people. He met after the Grenfell Tower fire. He met Frankie Boyle. That was a very interesting chat. Basically, people suggest people for him to talk to, and very often it's people they think he's not going to agree with entirely, and that's kind of what happened when he met Jonathan Pye, for example, because nominally they're both left wing, and so there's more in common between them than that isn't, for example. But they had we had the plague of the old people in the first part.
Nice, the plague of the dogs
and the dogs. So dogs don't care about free speech, just free pedigree chum. I don't know what the Spanish brand of that is, but Pedigree Amigo or something, is it?
Whiskas, no? Ah, no,
that's
for cats.
Maria,
I don't know.
The pet owner.
I don't know. Yeah, you can tell I only have a therapy, that's why.
Oh, and the hamster with the big bollock. Anyway.
That's for another podcast.
It's for our X-rated podcast. Yeah. Who would be... I can't remember the human equivalent of the hamster, but I'll find it.
Okay,
that went in down hamster. So back to free speech. Owen Jones comes from it maybe in a more absolute sense, and we do live in an absolute society, or a society of absolutes, of extremists, and of extremes. So, like, basically, the basic division between them was like, there can't be any slander or homophobic comments, because that's completely wrong. And of course Jonathan Boyd thinks that as well. I mean, we all think that any rational person would say, you know, anything that's like racist or homophobic is wrong inherently, but what Jonathan Boyd would say, like, they still have a right to say it, but you know, that doesn't mean we have to support it, but they have a right to say it, because that's what freedom of speech is. Because he says the flip side of that is, if they don't have the right to say that, what we're seeing now is that if you don't agree with a person's opinion, you become like the antithesis of that opinion. So if you don't agree fully with a feminist piece, you become a misogynist. And he's been called a misogynist recently because, like, there's a report in the paper about how, right, like, women earn, like, I can't remember the exact numbers, but a lot less than men in Ryanair. But he says, but that's not the full picture, because most of the pilots are men and most of the women are doing other jobs. Now, that's not to say that there aren't issues there, or that, like, there can't be more done to kind of make the pay more representative of the work they're doing and to make it fairer. But like, if you kind of like want to even open up that nuanced conversation, you know, people don't want that. They shut you down and say misogynist, fascist, and all those kind of things, for example. And that's the problem with society now at the moment, because because there's two problems. The first problem is that problem there, that like people have shut you down by calling you that name, but also people who are on the right will kind of like maybe jump on you and go, yeah, he's right, he's on our side, which is absurd, because like, even though Jonathan Pye might be, for example, if Owen Jones is a 10 on the left scale and one is like fucking, you know, Breitbart News and Trump and right wing, all that bollocks, you know maybe like he's he's a 10, I guess. John Paul's a 10, but like maybe on some issues he's more like a 7 or maybe an 8 or a 6 or a 6.5, for example. So he's still closer to Owen Jones than he is to the right wing, but the right wing will jump on that kind of like nuance and say, well, actually he's saying what we're saying, for example, and he's kind of criticizing like identity politics and why that's not particularly helpful, while Owen Jones would kind of like believe, well, you know, identity politics is who we are, because he's from the standpoint that we live in a very fundamentally patriarchal and misogynist society. I don't think Jonathan Pye believes that. Personally, I don't believe it either. I think that's too far. I think that's too damning of men and too condescending towards women. Like, I think there's obviously specific things that need to be addressed in terms of inequality between the genders, but the narrative that, you know, that some Western societies are fundamentally patriarchal and misogynist, you know, I don't really go along with as well. So, but again, if you kind of try and nuance that debate or that conversation, I think that leaves you open for some people to say, you know, you're a sexist, for example. So I think even though Owen Jones is a journalist, he came off a little bit worse in that like little debate. It's a Guardian video, you can find it online. And Jonathan Pye did very well to kind of argue the point that that needs to be nuanced. Also, another issue is that like the right wing, I mean, you have people like Milo Yiannopoulos, that kind of Greek guy. You have like the new kind of fucking love child of the right wing, what's his name, Jordan Peterson, and, you know, Ann Coulter over in the States, all these kind of like fringe right wing people who feel like that they don't get a say in things, or they're being excluded from the mainstream debate, and they feel kind of victimized, and so they set up their kind of extreme right wing think tanks or conventions or conferences so they can kind of get their ideas out, for example, which is kind of like another problem with free speech, I think, because they think people not accepting what they're saying as a lack of free speech, but really they have the free speech to say whatever they want, and we as a society have the right to say, no, that is misogynistic, sexist, racist, that's not it's not fair to have those opinions, for example. So I think there's a real misunderstanding fundamentally of what free speech is, for example. So this actor, you know, Jonathan Pye, I think he kind of helped kind of illuminate that a little bit in his exchange with Owen Jones. So now would you respect him a little bit more? Teeny weeny bit more?
No, I shall see more examples. Just that one, like, caught me off guard. But, well, I would agree with what you say. I think, like, another nuance to be made probably is to do with, like, public office. Like, I think, you know, I think there's a limitation there to the things that... There's a limitation to free speech there, I think. Because, like, I think if you have, like, if you hold, like, some public office, there are certain things that you shouldn't express.
Okay, interesting.
I'll leave it there.
What, is there an example of a Spanish politician that said something that was...
Well, but Spain doesn't apply, because, like, in Spain, like, people say, like, things they shouldn't say every day, you know?
Yeah,
and I'm not talking free speech, I'm talking, like, you know, like, offensive, whatever.
But do you think... Okay, so, in what, to go back to your previous point, then... I mean, you think they shouldn't say things that, okay, if they said it, you would agree with, but you just think, you think a politician shouldn't be saying things so unfettered or,
well, I think,
undiluted.
Like, yeah, I think, like, people in public office need to have, like, two personas, you know, like one is, like, the private person and the other one is the one that represents other people. So in as far as, like, you represent other people, I don't think you should, like, make personal opinions about, not personal opinions, like, obviously, like, your policies, hopefully they're supported by your real opinions. But I think there are certain... Well, I think, like, you know, you there are certain things that you can keep for yourself. It's like when you're... I don't know, like, the same way as you would say certain things in front of your friends, but not to the world, I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's always hilarious that parties like UKIP and BNP always try to play that game of having a very clean public image, and then like 2 days after they kind of say how committed they are to that. There's like a drunk guy at a UKIP party saying how all Pakis are bastards or something like that, you know?
No,
what I mean?
I don't mean yeah. Yes, I don't mean it in that way, that of course like it's pointless like being like that and then in private life like being so dismissive.
Yeah.
But I mean that I think like, well, I don't know, like I think in public office you should be careful not only with what you say but with what you do, because at the end of the day, I don't know, you're there representing a lot of people.
Well, I think that's fair, because you have to keep a lot of people in sight. Especially someone like, you know, Macron, for example, exemplifies kind of both those things. One of being, in one sense, very, very, like, unfiltered, I guess. But also, he has to respond to lots of different sides. He has to keep the kind of left and the right on side. So he can't go too far in that direction either. But also, people are very tired of the traditional party, so that they like people who kind of say things as they see them and don't care for this type of thing.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of Macron, like, it can come across as arrogance, or maybe you need that self-drive or that self-belief to do what he's trying to do, because he's taking on huge entities in terms of you know, trade unions in France, and he's trying to reform the economy, like the big white elephant of French politics that's never really been done. But in his case, like, this has been his first year, of the presidency. We'll see how far that takes him in the second year, because he can't coast on charisma and promises for much longer, because he's going to start to deliver intangible results.
And he's made some controversial decisions as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of like don't completely match
his public, yeah, his platform was like kind of like the darling of the left, but I think, yeah, his decisions have been more on the right. But that people say that's because the left will push come to shove, will support him, but the right need to be brought inside. So maybe you have this dance that all politicians have to do. But in the case of like someone like Trump, for example, like, he was completely unspoken. So I think, yeah, you're right. I think this supports your argument, because like, he was like saying for his whole campaign how China is like a criminal, they're stealing our jobs, for example. Now the other day he turned around and said we have to help the Chinese telephone company get back into business, for example, even though they've been implicated by the FBI in helping Chinese security agencies kind of listen in on American citizens and do kind of like not very nice things. So when you kind of say things that are very extreme, either you have to back them up, which is not always the best thing, because very often extreme things are very negative things, or you leave yourself open to ridicule, because like what you're actually doing is in such a stark contrast to what you're saying for like several months in the campaign trail. But this is a sad thing though, because like, nobody really cares, because if you are in one camp, you're in one camp. It's like a football team, you support that to the bitter end. And we mentioned in a previous podcast with Putin, for example, during the Russian elections, people were aware of the other things, but as long as their thing was looked after, they were happy with that, you know. And now when it comes to something like Trump, and there's like one town in Texas, I think, where he got the most votes of any place in the United States during the election, and that's because there were a lot of them are farmers. They wanted the state tax to be taken away, because if you have huge land, you need to be able to sell it or whatever, or transfer it onto somebody else without having to pay a huge amount of tax to the government, or otherwise they have to sell some of the land and maybe it won't be sustainable to keep the farm. And that has never been delivered, and this huge tax cut, it's screwed poor people and favored the rich. It was basically a present to rich people. And when these people who were banking on this were asked about, well, has your attitude changed towards Trump, they were like, I know, I mean, we'll live in hope, we'll see what happens, and all the other stuff, I'm not really paying too much attention to the Russian investigation or the other things, for example. So like, you know, the relationship we have with our politicians and our political parties is very irrational anyway, so like, it's hard to know, like, should you be outspoken, should you be kind of playing the game? Does it even matter? Because like, if people are behind you, I don't know, maybe they'll be all behind you no matter what, because they have this kind of philosophical idea that, well, you represent this thing that's fundamental to my identity, which is not your words, your policies, but your place in the political spectrum. So I don't know. So, but I think, yeah, you're probably right though, Dan, you know, to refer to your specific point, that you're probably better off playing it safe and having your private opinions, but also having measured public responses, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a bit what I was getting at, because
yeah.
at the end of the day, I mean, you're free to have your opinion, and you know, I hope you don't have like any extreme opinions like in your private life, but...
Oh, sorry to go after. There's two cops just rushing down here. I thought we were going to get nicked for having extreme political opinions, given how free speech goes in this country sometimes. But they seem to be going off to the right.
I think they've got distracted by the gymnastic people.
I think they're greeting the sun. so I'm sure some drug dealer is going to get his head bashed in a second. But okay, so yeah, continue, please.
No, just that, you know, like I think you just have to... I think perhaps because I'm used to politicians in Spain just putting their foot in it all the time, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like political correctness, it's just like having a bit of common sense that, you know, if you're like in public office and like you're representing, you cannot express yourself like the way you would express yourself in private, I think.
I think most people would go along with that. I think what annoys people is when something happens, like a tragedy or mismanagement, or somebody makes a mistake in terms of like health screening, or the police, you know, screw the pooch in a way. And there's always like a government statement we categorically deny, or we express our sincere regrets that this happened, and we'll undertake an internal review to make sure it never happens again, for example. So the official speak, I think, turns a lot of people off, because they feel like there's never really a personalization or acceptance maybe of guilt, but indeed that's an exceptional circumstances in the day-to-day running, or maybe not so exceptional circumstances, but in the day-to-day running of a government, yeah, it's probably better that they're more measured. Because I think if you look at like Ireland, for example, I think Irish politicians in the south have historically been very measured in how they've approach Northern Ireland, for example. So no matter what the prejudices are or the fears are of the other narrative or the other side, I think it's actually very hard to say factually, well, the Irish government has done this and that's why maybe United Ireland would be a mistake, for example. So I think there's an element of, I think, you know, because I remember as well studying this in university for my thesis, and they're very happy that Amnesty International could say the things that they couldn't, because they couldn't openly condemn some of the abuses that were happening there. And when somebody else could do it, they were like, okay, thank God somebody's saying it, because we're not really in a position to do that, for example. So, and later down the line, that's kind of given them more legitimacy, I think, and more power to be like a stakeholder in the conversation that's always happening in Northern Ireland, and make the idea of maybe joining up with the Republic more palatable at some stage in the future, who knows. But but anyway, so maybe we've gone off topic or start rambling, but but anyway, I don't know, of all the other many topics that we wanted to talk about, well, we've run out of time, I think, so there's always more podcasts, so that's part two. You can join us for part three, and you'll hear more Indian segues from Maria then. This is part three of the show. Joke's old now, Maria.
Okay.
Come on. Kill the joke. What's the deal with emailing you if you never open your email saying, hey, do you want to still get emails from us? Do they genuinely want to know?
Oh, yes.
Or are they like manipulating you?
Is this about like the European data protection new laws and stuff?
Oh, maybe it is.
Because I've been getting emails from everybody just saying you need to confirm that you still want to hear from us.
Oh yeah.
But then if you say you don't, then they say but if you don't take it, you won't hear from us.
Okay.
So then in the end, you have to take it anyway.
No, I've heard there's a few I haven't bother responding to, and I haven't heard from them since. So,
yeah, it's that you have to say you accept the changes.
Yeah.
European
Union.
New European law or something like that.
No wonder there's a Brexit. Overregulation, bureaucratic nonsense.
Yeah.
British royal wedding. Grr, can't wait.
Yeah. Not really.
I've seen adverts for it, because it's going to be broadcast on Spanish television on the Cosmopolitan channel. We started off part one talking about soap opera, so it's fitting that we end the show in part three with talk of superfluous publications that like trade in celebrity gossip, of which the British royal family are celebrities more than anything else. But I don't know. Do you think there actually will be an audience for this in Madrid?
Oh, well, just the same sad people that they look at it for, like, the Spanish royals or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, no, a lot of people just want to see what the dress is like and things like that.
Oh, you have a feeling it's going to be white.
Well, you never know.
Yeah. Well, you know, to be fair, even though we're taking the piss a little bit, I have a student who actually had to do a story about it. I don't know how that is, how that's turned out, but I have read briefly that, you know, because the bride-to-be is mixed race, that she's going to be a symbol for mixed race people. And there's a great BBC podcast about, you know, when you're mixed race, how sometimes you're not white enough and you're not black enough, you're kind of caught between two stools. So, you know, I'm sure, look, they're two human beings, I'm sure they have a happy life. But symbolically, I think, you know, if there's something positive like that for people who are mixed race and they can see something positive and there's a role model there, that's kind of cool. You know, that is good. But all the fact is, you know, royal family weddings and celebrities and you know, all that bollocks obviously is... I couldn't have put it better myself. Thank you so much for finishing that sentence. So you are off to Switzerland tomorrow.
Oh yes.
You're going to meet Infantino, president of UEFA.
Yes, I'm there on business.
Yeah, you are going to make a great push for taking the World Cup away from Qatar.
Yes, that's my bid.
It's going to be an Ireland joint Irish Spanish bid. Semi-finals in Ireland, in Dublin, final in Spain. We've actually learned some interesting stuff about the Bernabeu. The app should be launched at the end of the month, so if you want to hear our factoids about the Bernabeu, you can download that app more as that comes in. But I think there's not really much else, is there?
No, not much else.
Okay, so find us on alarpamedia.com. That's the website. LARPA1 is our Twitter. LARPA Media is our YouTube and Instagram handle.
And the tour, if you're in Madrid.
If you're in Madrid, the tour will also be happening at the end of the month. But we'll tell you more about that as well. Find us on Patreon and also veer.tv, where we'll be uploading more 360 videos. And we have a new video launching, kind of talking about our latest 360 video as well. Effectively, a behind the scenes. So that's it. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Alarpa Podcast, the home for cultural chit-chat in and outside Madrid. People will talk.